This is Florida Matters. I'm Steve Newborn. We're getting ready to have our first big election in Florida since the pandemic began earlier this year. How will that affect the number of people going to the polls? And will there be a blue wave in store for Democrats as they campaign in the midst of social distancing, virtual conventions, and a tanking economy? We'll get an election preview with Tampa Bay political reporter and columnist William March. I spoke to him via Zoom from our respective kitchen tables. We're going to zoom in on some of the local races in just a minute, but first, William, I'd like to take a broader look at the election coming up. The primary election is August 18th, and this is kind of be like a primary we've never had before, right? A lot of people probably won't go to the polls physically.
Obviously, this will be the first major election held in Florida during the pandemic, and there are a lot of questions about how well it's going to go. A lot of questions about whether there will be enough poll workers, whether the pandemic will cut turnout. This primary, how it goes, will answer some questions or show up some problems that could then occur during the obviously even more important general election in November.
So this is kind of like a dry run, I'd imagine, for November. We're going to see what kind of quirks are out there, what kind of problems, how many people actually bother showing up to the polls, right? So I guess a lot is at stake in this primary, maybe more than most primaries.
Well, there's also a lot of pressure on county election supervisors. They're having to try to put this whole thing together. And quite simply, nobody's ever done it before. They don't have a marked path.
Another big issue is the Supreme Court declined to intervene in a lower court ruling that prevents an overturn of the state law that said that felons had to pay all their restitutions, fines, and such before they could vote. Is that considered a big blow for probably Democrats, I'd imagine?
It is to some extent a blow for Democrats. As to how much, nobody can really say. There was always a question as to how many. Some people call them former felons, some call them returning citizens. There was always a major question as to how many of the hundreds of thousands of them there are in Florida would actually register and then actually go to the polls and vote. But a lot of people said that even if it was a small number, in Florida elections that are often decided by a percentage point or less, it could have mattered.
Well, let's talk generally. The Democrats say they're on a roll. They obviously have a lot of ammunition here with the pandemic, the Trump administration's reaction to the pandemic, the tanking economy, which is really nobody's fault. What do you think about the Democrats' chances to make up a lot of seats?
Well, they have some momentum right now. If there were a substantial blue wave, and you may recall we had a blue wave in the 2018 election, it affected a lot of down ballot races, though not the top of the ticket races. If we have another wave like that or even bigger, then Democrats could conceivably come close to parity with Republicans in the state Senate. In the state House, they could hold their own, possibly gain a seat or two. Potentially, if a blue wave was big enough, they could also pick off a couple of Tampa Bay area congressional seats, one in Hillsborough County, East Hillsborough, Lakeland, and Claremont, the seat now held by Republican Ross Spano, and one extending from Sarasota up through Manatee County and into Hillsborough, held by Vern Buchanan, Republican being challenged by Margaret Good. Now, there would have to be a pretty significant blue wave for either of those seats to flip. But there is increasingly, Democrats say, evidence that they are on a roll and that they do have some momentum. There is a new poll out that gives them some evidence for that. It shows a major drop in approval ratings for Governor Ron DeSantis, and it shows a major increase in Joe Biden's lead over Donald Trump in Florida. It's a Quinnipiac University poll.
Those are usually a little more reliable than some of the others. So Biden's numbers are up. What does the latest poll figure say? And let's compare that to maybe where Hillary Clinton was at this stage of the game 4 years ago.
Well, the Quinnipiac poll shows Biden ahead of Trump by 51% to 38%, or 13 points. Now, that's a major swing from the same poll last April, where Biden was up by 4 points, 46 to 42. the most reliable part of any poll is the change from a previous version of the same poll. And that's a pretty significant shift in Biden's favor. Now, Hillary Clinton, to my knowledge, was never that far ahead of Donald Trump in Florida.
And Florida is still considered, you know, a must win for Trump, right? The common knowledge out there is, or the common perception is, that without Florida, he doesn't win re-election. Do you think that's as true as it was 4 years ago?
Well, it turned out not to be true 4 years ago. And it was the first time in, I think, two decades that it hadn't been the case. Trump would have won even without Florida. But that was because of small shifts in voting in a couple of other very, very tight swing states. Most people believe that the conventional wisdom will go back to being the standard in the 2020 race, which is it's virtually impossible for a Republican to build an Electoral College majority without having Florida's 29 Electoral College votes. The reason for that is just because of the way the other states stack up. For example, Florida's the third biggest state. The other three in the top four, New York and California, are both reliably Democratic, and Texas is reliably Republican. And in order to build a majority, if the Democrat wins California and New York, the Republican has to have Florida in addition to Texas.
Well, let's talk about the power of the incumbency in this age of COVID-19. Maybe the president has an advantage here in that he can make personal appearances. He lives in Florida. He was going to have part of the Republican National Convention in Jacksonville until that was scotched recently. And Joe Biden hasn't seemed to be very visible in Florida. As far as I can tell, he's had two virtual meetings, for lack of a better word. The first one was billed as from Tampa, and it had Congresswoman Kathy Castor, some local people on there, and it was terribly glitch-filled. I don't know if you saw it, but it was part of it was just kind of incomprehensible to most people. And during the Democratic Leadership Gala very recently, it was billed as a big meeting between him and the Florida Democrats, and it was all taped. The Democratic head, Tom Perez, was there, and then Biden showed up, and he spoke for less than 15 minutes, taped, really didn't say much that was targeted at Florida specifically. I mean, do you think that might be an advantage for the president as we get into kind of the heat of the campaign coming up?
Well, the advantage of the incumbency is always there, and it's there again this year. However, there's kind of an unusual twist to it this year. As you're saying, Biden has not been out there nearly as much as Trump, but a lot of even Trump's allies have thought that when he did get out there, he didn't help himself all that much. He was famously criticized heavily for the daily coronavirus briefings that he used to have until he got to the point where he stopped having them because a lot of his allies thought they were doing him more harm than good. Being the incumbent at a time when the nation is facing these health and economic crises may not help you. Biden is taking advantage of that by not being out there a lot, by trying to make the election largely about Trump. And so far, if you look at polling numbers like the ones out of Florida, that's working. Given the state of the country right now, Biden is happy if the election is simply about Trump.
Let's talk about the effect on some of the local races. The Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee has targeted Ross Spano, the Congressional District 15 race that you mentioned earlier. He's had some problems in the past with illegal campaign contributions, and he's being heavily targeted in the upcoming primary. Let's talk about his opponent, Adam Hattersley, and also the journalist Alan Cohn, former TV journalist. How much of a chance do you think they have?
Well, what this goes back to, I think, is the question of whether there will be a Democratic surge, a blue wave in the 2020 election. Without one, you have to say that the Republican nominee in that district will have the advantage. It's a red-leaning district. Now, as you noted, Democrats are heavily targeting it. In fact, they're probably their two best chances to flip a Republican seat to Democrat are both in our area. That district, which is in East Hillsborough, Lakeland, and Claremont, and the Vern Buchanan district, which is in Sarasota, Manatee, and Southern Hillsborough. But both of them are red-leaning districts, and in both of them, it would require probably a Democratic surge for the Democrats to have a chance to flip those districts. Spano is being challenged by a very serious primary challenger, a Republican, challenging a sitting Congress member of his own party, and that is Scott Franklin, a Lakeland City Commissioner. And it's a serious challenge from Franklin. There is a possibility, at least, that he could win. It's a little hard to predict that primary race. If Spano wins the primary and keeps the nomination to keep his seat, Democrats think that they have a chance to unseat him because of federal investigations, which still are not resolved, into some campaign finance irregularities in his 2018 race. He has acknowledged that his campaign broke the law, taking in close to $200,000 in illegal loans.
This has kind of evoked a bit of a geographical split. And Scott Franklin, as you mentioned, is from Lakeland, and there seems to be a split between Hillsborough and Polk County. Polk Sheriff Grady Judd just came out and endorsed Franklin. Do you think that might have some play into this? There's still some kind of a split between the two, and it might pull the election one way or another?
It will definitely have an effect, Steve. The question is how much effect. The history here is that this district was represented by Lakeland people for decades. The most recent one was Dennis Ross, up until Ross Spano won the seat in 2018. But the way it's been redrawn in the last redistricting, half of the district is in eastern Hillsborough County. Ross Spano won the seat, and he beat at least one major Polk County Republican in a primary to do so. Now, that has caused some unhappiness among Polk County people because that was the only congressman who lives in Polk County. In other words, there's a feeling there that Tampa took away our congressional representative, even though, as I said, half of the district is in Hillsborough County. So now that probably will help Scott Franklin win some votes in Polk County. Possibly he'll win the Polk County portion of the district. Can Ross Spano build up enough of a majority in the Hillsborough part of the district to overcome what could be an advantage for Franklin and Polk? There's no way to quantify any of this. I don't have any information to indicate how much of an advantage this will be for Scott Franklin or how much of an advantage Ross Spano will have in Hillsborough. But it's definitely a factor. There's no question it's to some degree a factor.
Have you seen any kind of poll numbers on this race at all?
No, I haven't seen any polling that answers these questions. There are polls, internal polls, being done by the candidates, but they're keeping the results of those very close to the vest, and I haven't seen any published polls.
All right, another race that has a geographic split is the one you mentioned earlier between incumbent Vern Buchanan, who's been in office since 2007, and Representative Margaret Good. Buchanan has pretty much been Teflon as far as previous races are concerned, but he's gotten some flack recently for his car dealerships taking part in the PPP, the Paycheck Protection Program that Congress passed that he voted for. So, you know, one of the claims is that he personally benefited from this. Any chatter on that race, or how much of a chance do you think Margaret Good has where some of the other Democrats have not had in the past?
This is one of the Democrats' top targets in Florida, but again, it's still a Republican-leaning district. Now, geography is to some extent a disadvantage for the Democratic challenger, Margaret Good. She is currently a state representative and won a district in Sarasota and beat Vern Buchanan's son to do that. However, she has never run before in Manatee County. Much of the district is in Manatee, or in Hillsborough County, and a small part of the district is in southern Hillsborough. So geography is something of a disadvantage for her there. Now, the story that you mentioned about Vern Buchanan's car dealerships receiving PPP loans, that's caused quite a kerfluffle. And it's got some resonance to it because Vern Buchanan is one of the wealthiest members of Congress. He's worth some $70 million. However, it's been undercut because the law firm that Margaret Good works for also got a PPP loan. And so did the Charter Air Service that her husband works for. Now, they're not wealthy and they don't own these companies. that got the loans, as Buchanan has ownership interests in these car dealerships. But still, that has undercut some of the effect of the story about Buchanan's loans.
I'm talking with political reporter and columnist William March about the upcoming primaries, which will be held on August 18th. We'll now zoom in on some more local races that will come before the voters.
Some of the other congressional races up for grabs here include Charlie Crist. This is a fairly Democratic-leaning district in Pinellas County. Anybody in the lead there who might have a credible chance against the former governor come November?
Well, it's a blue-leaning district, but it's not by any means solid blue. Up until 4 years ago, it had been Republican for many years. David Jolly was the last Republican to hold it. And now there are five Republicans who are running in a primary to challenge Charlie Crist. At least three of them have raised significant amounts of money. One of those five Republicans is George Buck, and Charlie Crist beat him in 2018 by 58-42%. But two others, Amanda Maki and Anna Paulina Luna, have also raised significant amounts of money. It's not clear to me which one of those is the front runner to win the nomination, but most likely it would take a Republican wave for any of them to seriously threaten Charlie Crist. The only congressional district located entirely within Hillsborough County is Tampa's Kathy Castor, a Democrat, and she is very solid in that seat. Even a major Republican wave probably would not threaten her. There are two Republicans in a primary to challenge her right now. One of them is Christine Quinn. She's probably the leader. She ran against Castor in 2018, and Castor won by 62-38%. So there's almost certainly no threat to Kathy Castor.
Let's go on to the House District 70 Democratic primary. Wingay Newton, who's been there quite a while, is moving on to run for the county commission. And he has got several challengers. Let's talk about that and who's considered the front runner right now.
Wingay Newton, as you said, is leaving his House seat early before his term limit is up, and in order to take advantage of an open county commission seat. And that leaves his House District 70 seat open. That's a minority access district. It was set up for the purpose of electing a minority candidate, and the winner of the Democratic primary would be the winner even if there were any Republicans running, but there aren't. There are only four Democrats running in that district. So that will be a universal primary, and Republicans, others who aren't registered Democrat, will be allowed to vote in it. The four candidates are Mark Oliver, Michelle Rayner, Keisha Bell, and Michelle Grimsley. And it's competitive. It's a little difficult for me to say who is the front runner. It could be Michelle Rayner. She is a lawyer with her own firm. She is backed by, among others, Charlie Crist, the congressman, Del Roussan, the state senator from that area, and Jennifer Webb, who's a state House member from St. Petersburg. But Keisha Bell, also a lawyer. She has run before. She's run unsuccessfully for the school board and run unsuccessfully against Wingay Newton in the past for his House seat. Then Michelle Grimsley is Wingay Newton's longtime legislative aide. He is strongly backing her. And then Mark Oliver has done significantly well in fundraising. He and Rayner are the two front runners in fundraising. So it's a little tough to pick a clear front runner in that race.
Let's stay on the Pinellas side of the bay here for a minute here. The seat that Wingay Newton is going for, he's aiming to replace Ken Welch on the county commission. Frank Peterman is one of the people he's going to be competing against. This sounds like it's going to be a pretty tough race.
This is going to be a tough race. This is for the county commission seat that Ken Welch is leaving open, and it's very competitive. You have Wingay Newton. You have, as you mentioned, Frank Peterman, who is a former state representative, a former city council member. Then you have Renee Flowers, who's on the school board and is a former city council member. One of those three will face a no-party candidate, Maria Scruggs, who is the local NAACP president. So this is a very competitive race. You might pick Wingay Newton as the front runner because he's the one who's been most recently on ballots in the area, but you certainly cannot discount Peterman and Flowers. That's going to be a tough race, and I wouldn't call it.
William, let's talk about some of the other races that you think are pretty interesting. There might be some toss-ups here. Any of the local races particularly have piqued your interest?
Well, in Hillsborough County, we have another universal primary, two Democrats running for clerk of court, Kevin Beckner and Cindy Stewart. The winner will replace Pat Frank, who's sort of a Democratic icon in Tampa. Then there's a county commission primary for the only seat on the Hillsborough County Commission that has been held by a Black commissioner to replace the outgoing Les Miller. And there are four significant, strong Black candidates in that primary, but there's also one white one. A lot of Black activists in East Tampa fear that the non-Black vote will line up behind the Hispanic candidate, his name is Rick Fernandez, and result in an all-white board of commissioners in Hillsborough County. That's considered a distinct possibility. The Black candidates are Gwen Myers, former city council member Frank Reddick, former city council member and former county commissioner Tom Scott, and a young woman who's a champion of the progressive wing of the Democratic Party named Sky White. So that's one of the most interesting primaries going on here in Hillsborough County.
There are several names there that are quite familiar to the voters. You care to go out on a limb and predict the winner of that?
If you held a gun to my head and forced me to make a prediction, I would say Tom Scott. He's probably the best and longest known of the five candidates. But Frank Reddick just finished 8 years on the city council. Gwen Myers is campaigning very hard and has built a name in the community. Sky White, as I said, has progressive backing. And there is a chance that if the Black vote splits among those four, Rick Fernandez, who has built a strong reputation as a civic activist in Tampa Heights and Seminole Heights, could conceivably win. So if you force me to bank a choice, I'd pick Tom Scott, but I wouldn't bet a lot of money on it.
Well, I'm not planning to hold a gun to yours or anybody else's head, but thanks for that. And I'm going to ask you the same question about the Hillsborough County Commission District 1 race, too. There's a couple of familiar names in there as well.
There you have competitive primaries on both sides. Most likely, the Democrat will have an advantage in that district. And the Democratic candidates are Harry Cohen, a former city council member who ran this past spring for mayor, and Jennifer McDonald, who is a young, politically active woman making, I think this is her first run for elective office. Cohen is probably the front runner there, but McDonald is running a very vigorous campaign. On the Republican side, you have also a competitive primary, Tony Morahone versus Scott Levinson. As I said, the Democrat probably will have the advantage there, and Harry Cohen has by far the best known name of the four and has raised by far the most money of the four. You'd have to pick him as the front runner to win both the primary and the general in that race.
All right, William, any other races you want to weigh in on?
Well, we've got a Republican challenger to our sheriff, Chad Cronister. And that's an interesting situation because Chad Cronister has been criticized by some local Republicans because of his outreach to Democratic voters, including, in fact, making contributions to the local Democratic Party. He is working hard to shore up his base. The problem from Cronister's point of view is that Hillsborough County is trending blue, and he is concerned that any Republican starts off at a disadvantage. That's why he's been courting Democratic votes. But then he's also got a Republican challenger in the primary. He then has a Democratic challenger in the general election, Gary Pruitt, who ran against Cronister 2 years ago. Cronister beat him, but not by a huge margin, in spite of the fact that Pruitt had virtually no money and no name recognition. And this is why Cronister is concerned about his prospects as a Republican on a countywide ballot in a county that's turning blue. There are a couple of other interesting primaries going on around the area. In Pasco County, there's going to be another universal primary, and that's a primary where only candidates in one party are running. So that primary will decide the election, and all voters, not just members of that party, get to vote. It's a Republican contest for a county commissioner to replace Mike Wells. And there are four candidates, but the leader probably a strong front runner in that race is Gary Bradford, who's a lobbyist for the Police Benevolent Association. So that's at least three that I'm aware of universal primaries going on in the Tampa Bay area, which is unusual in my experience.
All right, wrapping up, William, I'm going to return to what way we started here. Really, do you think that there is a blue wave happening in the Tampa Bay area? I mean, Hillsborough, like you said, is trending blue, but most of the rest of the counties are either split 50-50 down the middle, or places like Pasco, Polk, and Sarasota that are still pretty red. So any final thoughts here as to the outcome of this election, how the COVID-19 keeping people home is going to factor into that? Anything at all you'd like to weigh in on?
The rule of thumb, the conventional wisdom, is that a higher turnout is always better for Democrats. A lower turnout is always better for Republicans. Now, to that extent, then yes, the virus, if it damps down voter turnout, could be a problem for Democrats. However, I've been seeing an awful lot of polling on a national level lately that shows that even though Republicans are deeply enthusiastic, extremely eager to get out and vote for Donald Trump, Democrats are almost as eager to get out and vote against him. So both sides could have enthusiasm advantages working for them in this race. Again, the Tampa Bay area, as you noted, Hillsborough County is turning blue, but it's not deep blue yet. It's more bluish purple. Pinellas County, you could say something similar. And the surrounding counties still tend to be red tinged. So the Tampa Bay area as a whole is still very much a swing area, very much a part of the I-4 corridor swing area that tends to decide Florida elections.
All right, should be an interesting one. William March is a veteran political journalist and columnist, and we look forward to talking to you again in the future after the primary. You maybe get a little update on what's happening around November. William, thanks so much for your time.
Great, enjoyed it, Steve.
And that's it for today's show. Florida's local primaries will be held August 18th, and then the political season heats up, highlighted by a showdown for president on November 3rd. I'm Steve Newborn. Thanks for listening.